The Economist magazine for May 16th through 22nd continues on page 65, the business section. Bartleby, introducing velocity pivot. The corporate world's lorem ipsum. We are pleased to announce a modern alternative to the lorem ipsum text. This much-loved piece of filler text, derived from Cicero's De Finibus Bonorum et Malorum, has been used for layout purposes for centuries and remains available for anyone to use. But we believe that other newer forms of meaningless babble are even better at taking up space, which is why we are thrilled to unveil Velocity Pivot. For most forms of corporate communication, it is not necessary to change the text at all before you publish. Velocity Pivot, hunger to win, relentless execution, insatiable appetite, artificial intelligence, token maxing, tokenized, toe-curling, double-digit, growth, transformational, volatility, fireside chat, drinking from a fire hose, burning platform, general pyromania, augmentation, not automation. It is not AI that will take your job, but the person using AI, headcount reduction, tough decisions, right-sizing. Innovation powerhouse, three horizons, four P's, five ways, six is too many, town hall, watercolor conversations, water cooler conversations, think like owners, speed up, fast forward, step back, step up, zoom in, out, I'm feeling quite dizzy, helicopter view, deep dive, top down, bottom up, downside, upside, rotating, turn around, no really, I'm going to be sick. Change management strategic strategizing. Waterfall agile sprint cascade. Tentpole brainstorming. Whiteboard, Miro board, senseless and modernizing digitization. Revolution, not evolution, not revolution. Vibe coding, value added, MVP, SVP, FIF. Hey, CRO, MCP, PRD, BBQ, BAU, KPI, DEI. Though we don't talk about the last one much anymore. Data is the new oil models. Oil is the new oil surplus. Abundance multiplier effect 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times, oh what the hell, 10,000 impact, deep impact, really deep impact, supercharged, super excited, superpower, super intelligence, supermarket, superstars, tipping point, inflation point, choke points, 3-point turn, lean, elevate, sharpen, reach out, circle back, converge, spin up, spin down, spin out, edge cases, use cases, suitcases, frequent flyer lounges, platinum member air miles, in-flight dynamic environment, shifting landscape, new industrial revolution bias for action, actionable traction, tractionable, is that a word? It is now imagine, reinvent, reinforce, revamp, renew, redefine, resilient, grit, growth, mindset, futuristic, heuristic, holistic, optimistic, systematic, getting the IC, transforming the value proposition, propositioning, transformational value, delighting customers, strengthening communities, leveraging insights, other verb-noun combinations, end-to-end workflows, deployment, training, inference, stack, full, slack, attack, geopolitics, geonomics, geotechnology, geography's back, top right-hand, quadrant, total alignment, partial alignment, non-alignment, disagree, and commit together. Unfolding, ever-changing, fresh, perspectives, instant personalized, large-scale, multi-year, multi-service, long-term investment pipelines, embedded ecosystem leaders, leading through leaderships, leaden pros, new normal paradigms, paradox parabola, hockey stick, J-curve, K-shaped, A-game, C-suite, Beyonce. Improved outcomes, purpose values, mission behaviors, custom centricity, customer obsessed sounds, a bit creepy, to be honest, bold, audacious, daring, restless, ambitious, ambition, world-class, industry-leading, game-changing, top-line metrics, blueprint corporate DNA, digital workforce orchestration, agentic compute, fueling, propelling, driving, accelerating, never breaking, operational platform analytics, global footprint, local know-how, uniquely positioned, scaling, powering, delivering, achieving, winning, executing, mastering, aggressive, compete, complete, passivity, just kidding, decision points, gates, milestones, gallstones, durable, sustainable, confident, momentum, sentiment, differentiated, competitive advantage, organic growth, inorganic growth, basic growth core, business core strength, core blimey cycles, cycling, triathlon, lycra stretch goals, objectives, key results at scale pace of change, testament to the value of the brand, maximize breakthroughs, unlock potential, expand frontiers, utilize headroom, advance something or another, velocity, pivot, hunger to win, relentless execution, insatiable appetite, artificial intelligence, token maxing, token toe curling, double-digit growth, transformational volatility, fireside chat, drinking from a fire hose, burning platform, general pyromania, augmentation, not automation. It's not AI that will take. The last article in the business section comes from page 66, Schrumpeter. Big Tech's Income Gap. America's hyperscalers are sacrificing their cash flows to prop up the AI boom. A chart is haunting Silicon Valley. The profits of big cloud computing firms, Amazon, Google, Meta, Microsoft, and Oracle, are rising inexorably. Yet, the amount of cash flow they generate after capital spending is falling. Sketched together, these soaring profits and diving free cash flows, which until recently rose in unison, resemble the gasps of the world's investors. In short order, America's biggest companies have gone from printing money to burning it. Amazon, Meta, and Microsoft are all expected by analysts to announce negative cash flows in at least one quarter this year. Alphabet, the parent company of Google, will just about keep its head above water. Oracle, the weakest of the bunch, is already drowning. It does not take Poirot to work out what's going on. This year, the five firms will spend $800 billion filling warehouses with computers to run artificial intelligence models. These investments barely register on their profit statements. Since assets depreciate only once built, and then only slowly. Cash flow statements, though, are less susceptible to obfuscation. At around 40% of their revenues this year, The cloud giants' capital expenditures will surpass those of the oil industry during the shale boom in the 2010s and the telecom industry during the dot-com bubble in the 1990s. Arguments dismissive of the scale of big tech's transformation have collapsed under the weight of the growing bill. Comparisons to the dot-com bubble are wrong-headed because the big spenders today generate ample cash flows, went one argument. Not anymore. Their cash flow pressures cannot be that great because firms are still buying back bucket loads of their own stock, many said. During the most recent quarter, buybacks collapsed. A third is that the big tech trades at only 23 times the firm's forecast earnings. Yes, but when the denominator of this equation captures almost nothing of their spending, is it at all useful? Nowadays, investors judge the success of these firms on the basis of concentrated revenue contracts stretching far into the future rather than dispersed sales received today. Mostly, these contracts involve selling computing capacity to model makers like OpenAI and Anthropic, which are themselves incinerating vast piles of cash. Total future revenue agreements have risen to $2 trillion from $730 billion last year at Amazon, Google, Microsoft, and Oracle. Meta is a buyer rather than a seller of computing capacity. Simple balance sheets with intangible assets and generous cash buffers have been replaced by ones which are complicated, asset-heavy, and indebted. Since the start of last year, the Big Five have raised $260 billion from bond markets, a quarter of all such borrowing by listed American non-financial firms. What started as a local affair has become a global bacchanal. Nearly a third of the haul from selling bonds this year is in currencies other than the dollar. Alphabet, Google's parent, will soon issue its first bonds denominated in yen. Much larger obligations lurk off balance sheet. The biggest are $820 billion of future payments to lease data centers yet to be built, up from $270 billion a year ago. Commitments to spend money on other things, like packing their data centers with chips, have risen as fast. Amazon, Google, Meta, and Oracle now disclose $680 billion of such obligations. Other bills are tied to special purchase vehicles, separate entities with their own balance sheets. Last year, one assembled to build Meta's new data center in Louisiana, issued the biggest single corporate bond in history. Oracle's finance chief recently talked about uncoupling the firm's cash flows from its capex, presumably with similarly advanced financial engineering. This vast nexus of AI contracts combines an absolute faith in technologists with a naive trust in lawyers. Occasionally, the market is discerning about what these contracts really mean. Oracle's shares have been hammered since investors realized how dependent its future revenue is on OpenAI. More often, the market is obtuse. Bankers increasingly whisper about decaying documentation in AI financial agreements. When we ask our lawyers to find ways that a hyperscaler might wiggle away from or renegotiate a lease contract, often they come back with a very long list, says the boss of one big lender that has stayed clear of some more esoteric financing structures in the AI boom. Kamikaze Capex. So far, the Capex splurge has been a great act of charity to the rest of America's tech industry. The five firms have assumed the role of central planners, attempting to make the complex chain of returns on investment work across the AI economy. Data centers are useless if businesses don't find models worth paying for, which only happens if model makers can raise enough capital to make them. In the process, the hyperscalers have sacrificed their own returns. Only shares in Alphabet have beaten the NASDAQ index during the past year. Big tech has also liberally lent its credit worthiness across capital markets. Many firms that contract with the giants can take those contracts to the bank, literally, and raise more debt. Moreover, the hyperscalers' capex has become someone else's free cash flow. Broadcom, Micron, NVIDIA, SanDisk, four chip-making companies are all minting real fortunes, outfitting big data centers. Together, they account for a quarter of the expected growth in S&P 500 index this year. Clearly, this is unsustainable, without enterprises becoming much more willing to pay for AI. But for now, there are no brakes on the train. The hyperscalers' capex bills this year will be twice as great as the analysts predicted. That would be a year ago. If AI models keep getting hungrier for computing power and the cost of equipment keeps rising, the forecast will soon be left behind, as those that came before it were. After 2 years of consistent shock and awe, nothing would be less shocking. The Economist magazine continues with its finance and economics section, beginning on page 67. Techno-Economics 1. The Job Apocalypse, a Very Short History. San Francisco. Mass unemployment induced by AI would be unprecedented. At no time in polling history have Americans felt less optimistic about their long-term employment prospects. The average person believes they have a 22% chance of losing their job in the next 5 years, according to one survey, a higher share than even during the global financial crisis of 2007 through 2009. The cause of this gloom is artificial intelligence. Nearly one in five American workers recently told another pollster that AI or automation is very or somewhat likely to replace them. It isn't just average people who are alarmed. So are the leaders of the very AI companies causing the anxiety. Dario Amodi of Anthropic has warned that the AI could push unemployment to 10 to 20%. Bill Gates, co-founder of Microsoft, said that in an AI world, people will not be needed for most things. Sam Altman, boss of OpenAI, has clocked that talking up the technology's disruptive power is provoking a backlash, and now speaks of tools to augment and elevate people, not entities to replace them. But even he could not resist mentioning disruption / significant transition as we switch to new jobs. Economists are, for a change, far less dismal. They are allergic to the lump of labor fallacy, which treats the job market as static and zero sum. If technology displaces workers from some occupations, they argue, it enriches others, who then spend their gains on goods and services that create new employment. The labor market certainly is not cracking yet. The share of the OECD's working age population with a job keeps breaking records. Unemployment across the club of mostly rich countries is just 5%. And America employs more people than ever in AI-exposed industries, like law. American graduates have been struggling since before OpenAI launched ChatGPT in late 2022. See next article. Many economists foresee relatively little disruption ahead. Those at America's Bureau of Labor Statistics think the country will add 5.2 million jobs between 2024 and 2034, increasing total employment by 3%. Advances in AI capabilities could render current data and extrapolations from this obsolete. But if this happened, and AI really put millions of people out of work, it would be unprecedented in human history. Never have new technologies spread fast enough to make large numbers of people unemployed for a long time. Understanding why may shed light on how this time is and is not different. Historical data suggests that technological diffusion always proceeds slowly. In a paper published in 2012, Robert Gordon of Northwestern University found that since 1300, growth of GDP per person at whatever was the world's most sophisticated economy of its time has never exceeded 2.5% a year. When other countries grew faster than this, they did so by catching up with the richer place that almost by definition sparked earlier wealth-creating technological progress. But the fact that growth at the frontier of innovation was slower meant that was the pace of any job destruction. Take farming. Although it has undergone monumental technological upheaval over the past millennium, farm employment has changed only slowly. The share of England's labor force in agriculture has been falling steadily since the 16th century, without ever collapsing suddenly. The recognizably modern tractor was invented in America at the start of the 20th century, and it took generations rather than years for the agricultural workforce to decline. Even when job disruption is faster, workers need not suffer. In the middle of the 20th century, the first computers, shipping containers, and other wonders led Harold Wilson, the British Prime Minister, to describe the white heat of technology burning through Western economies. GDP per person in America, which had by then dislodged Britain as the world's frontier economy, grew by 2.5% a year, the fastest ever for a leading economic power. The level of job disruption, as measured by the share of employment shifting between industries or occupations, was at times more than twice as high as it is today. Yet many people look back fondly on the era as a time of rising wages, widening opportunity, and unpolarized politics. One instance of technological change has become notorious: the Industrial Revolution in 19th century Britain. According to some accounts, it was horribly disruptive to workers. James Watt's inventions in 1760 through 1780s made steam engines efficient enough to power factories. This led to a period of blistering economic growth that appeared to coincide with stagnation in inflation-adjusted wages. Between 1790 and 1840, these barely budged, even as capitalists earned vast profits. Today's thought leaders in Silicon Valley often invoke this pause. It is associated with Friedrich Engels, a capitalist heir turned communist, who described it in The Condition of the Working Class in England, his account of Manchester's slums in the 1840s. Recent scholarship, though, casts doubt on whether Engels' pause is a useful blueprint for what AI may have in store for workers. The composition of British employment saw little churn until the 1850s, and then only as much as it does today. Moreover, if technology destroyed jobs, it created plenty more. Between 1760 and 1860, the number of Britons in work ballooned from 4.5 million to 12 million. Unemployment generally remained modest. Wage growth was indeed slow during Engels' pause, but no slower than in the half century before it. This reflected slow productivity growth in the Industrial Revolution's early years, itself a function of the gradual diffusion of Watt's technological breakthroughs. By 1830, only about 160,000 horsepower was in use in the whole of Britain, equivalent to 1,000 typical modern cars. Given rapid population growth in the period, it is a truly remarkable achievement that workers' purchasing power grew at all. As Sir Tony Wrigley, a late British demographer, put it, "It looks even more remarkable if you adjust wages, not just by the consumer price index, as historians tend to, but by the average price of domestically produced output, the GDP deflator." The gap between the two measures of real wages illustrates a crucial point about the Industrial Revolution. The average employer paid workers reasonably fairly after selling his wares and deducting the cost of materials. He did not profit from exploiting his staff, as Engels supposed. The problem for laborers was less unfair pay than sharp rises in the cost of living. Food prices rose steadily and sometimes soared because of war and high tariffs on grain imports. The villains of the Industrial Revolution were politicians, not machines. This puts a different gloss on the industrial unrest of the period. In the early 19th century, textile workers revolted, destroying the power looms they thought would kill their craft. A few years later, farm laborers smashed threshing machines across southern England. Historians link such unrest to technological disruption, yet strikes and wrecking are as old as time. In England, riots were less frequent in the early 1800s. The middle of the Engels pause, then later in the century, when real wages were growing strongly. The Chartists, who secured suffrage and other rights for working men, did not gain ground until wage growth was unpaused in the 1840s. Nicholas Crafts, an economic historian, summed it up neatly. The Industrial Revolution, he wrote, is not a template for technological change that boosts productivity at the expense of significant decline in labor share of national income. In short, those warnings of AI-driven mass unemployment are predicting something that has never happened before. That does not mean it can never happen at all. The first signs would be sharply rising productivity combined with weak real wage growth in America, the world's frontier economy. This would show up as an increase in GDP per person above Mr. Gordon's ceiling of 2.5%, and a simultaneous jump in corporate profits, reflecting the gains from higher output flowing to capital, not labor. Another signal would be big job losses in lots of industries. History holds a final lesson. If disruption is coming, it will show up in a recession. Downturns cleanse the economy of unproductive jobs. Companies must make radical changes to survive. Weak firms go under. Capital and labor moves to more productive ones. Almost all of America's once routine jobs have vanished during past downturns. Which ones vanish next time will offer a big hint. Until then, everyone, including Messrs. Modi, Gates, and Altman, will remain none the wiser about the shape of the AI world to come. Finance and Economics section continues on page 69 with Techno-Economics 2, Rage Against the Machine. Is AI putting graduates out of work already? There's no sign in the data that AI is costing anybody their job right now, Kevin Hassett, a White House advisor, said on May 11th. Someone should tell America's class of 2026. It's grim, one professor says, of the market for graduate jobs. Artificial intelligence is the popular villain. In a recent commencement ceremony in Florida, a speaker was booed for mentioning it, and not without reason. Our analysis suggests AI may indeed be harming some graduate jobs prospects. A university degree no longer seems to offer much protection from joblessness. Recent graduates are likelier to be unemployed than the average American. The current cohort feels particularly gloomy. Less than a fifth of them think this is a good time to find a job. the lowest share in over a decade and well below the figure for Americans overall at more than a quarter. A slump on campus recruiting is not helping. Job postings on Handshake, a research platform for university students, are 50% below their peak of 2022. Many suspect AI is to blame. More than half of employers say they have considered replacing entry-level workers with the technology. A recent poll by the Institute of Politics at Harvard University's Kennedy School found that similarly, more than half of young Americans see AI as a threat to their job prospects. Economists are more divided. A paper by Eric Bjornolfsson at Stanford University and colleagues, published in 2025, examined unemployment among young workers in AI-exposed jobs, such as software development. The authors found it had fallen by 16% relative to less exposed fields. But a paper published this year by Zana Iskanko and Fabian Curto-Millet, two economists at Google, casts doubt on the idea that young workers, in particular, are being replaced by AI. They found that job postings in AI-exposed occupations have declined just as sharply for senior workers as for junior ones, and that this trend predicted the launch of ChatGPT in late 2022. Another study by Morgan Frank of the University of Pittsburgh and colleagues showed that the labor market outcomes have deteriorated for AI-exposed employees, but that this trend also began before ChatGPT was released. The Economist has conducted its own analysis using a largely overlooked source of data, 10 years' worth of surveys of recent college graduates from the National Association of Colleges and Employers. Each year, American universities ask new alumni whether they are working, unemployed, or in graduate school. Using their responses, we compared labor market outcomes in fields with differing levels of exposure to AI before and after the arrival of large language models. We found that graduates in fields more exposed to AI have suffered markedly worse outcomes. Between 2022 and 2024, graduates in the least exposed quintile, studying subjects such as education, philosophy, and civil engineering, saw their average full-time employment rate fall by just 1.5 percentage points. Those in the most exposed quintile, including computer science, computer engineering, and information science, suffered a 6.6 percentage point drop. See chart. We updated these figures for the most exposed fields using data from 13 universities and found that the trend continued for the class of 2025. The rate of full-time employment fell from nearly 70% to 55% in 3 years. Notably, the 3 years following ChatGPT's release in 2022. Prior to that, it had been stable. Students are already changing course. Data from the National Student Clearinghouse, a research group, show that undergraduate enrollment in computer science fell by 11% in 2025. Enrollment in computer programming, which focuses on coding skills rather than theory, dropped by 26%. The work done by computer science graduates is changing too. Less time is spent writing code. More is devoted to designing and organizing software systems at a higher level. Lana Yarosh, Director of Undergraduate Studies in Computer Science at the University of Minnesota, says she understands students' anxieties. It's always hard when things change, but computer science is a field where everything changes all the time. Finance and economics continued. Techno-economics 3. Robots serve the people. Qingdao, Shanghai. And Shanghai. China wants more automation, not fewer workers. A year ago, the city of Qingdao had just a handful of autonomous vehicles. Now, it has more than almost anywhere else on Earth. One firm, Neolix, has put around 1,200 unmanned delivery vans on local roads in hopes to have 4,000 by the end of the year. With several other autonomous taxi and food delivery projects underway, Qingdao exemplifies how rapidly artificial intelligence is transforming China. It is also the front line of a clash between unmanned vehicles and drivers. Autonomous cars and drones are being deployed in China at a dizzying pace. About 33,000 short-range delivery vehicles, including the ones in Qingdao, were on Chinese roads at the end of 2025. The number of unmanned cabs is expected to hit 14,000 by the end of 2026. Goldman Sachs, a bank, reckons that more than 700,000 robo-taxis, meaning 12% of all ride-hailing vehicles, will roam Chinese cities within 5 years. Meituan, a delivery super app, believes it could use drones for 10% of the country's instant food deliveries, of which $60 billion were made last year. Although each such delivery is a technological miracle, in the short run, it may deprive a human driver of a fare. This puts Chinese leaders in a bind. They want to lead the world in AI and automation, but not destroy jobs. An economic plan for the next 5 years says the country must prevent and resolve large-scale unemployment risks. In April, a cybersecurity watchdog told developers in a draft document that they should not apply AI with the goal of replacing human employment. The first question is whether technology will be able to replace millions of drivers in short order. Projects have been launched in dozens of Chinese cities, but growth has slowed owing to congestion and technical glitches. No company has deployed more than 1,200 vehicles in any one city. The size of Neolix's fleet in Qingdao has fluctuated in response to traffic jams caused by its vans. Although these are permitted to drive at any time, they are only allowed to make deliveries only in off-peak daytime hours. Even so, on an April morning near a large wholesale market, bands of Neolix vehicles could be seen clogging up the road to honks and jeers. In the city of Wuhan, home to one of the world's biggest robo-taxi projects, autonomous vehicles have also jammed traffic. Baidu, a tech giant, and Wuhan's main operator of driverless taxis, has a fleet of around 1,000 for well over a year. It may not grow for a while. In March, dozens of Baidu's cabs suddenly froze, snarling up traffic and prompting a rescue effort for stranded passengers. Since then, the central government has suspended the issuance of new licenses for robo-taxis. A second question is, which jobs are threatened and which are safe in the longer run? Authorities in Qingdao are not worried about unemployment caused by Neolicks, says Wang Hongli, a company executive. In fact, senior officials in the wider Shandong province want as many as 15,000 driverless short delivery vehicles on roads by the end of 2027. One reason for the insouciance is the sort of human drivers these might displace. Neolix runs only business-to-business services, such as delivering meat from markets to restaurants. Many people who do this are in their 60s and drive small, three-wheeled vehicles that tip over in traffic. Few young people seek to replace them when they retire because this perilous work pays poorly and entails a lot of heavy lifting. This makes machines the obvious choice for the job. Drivers who ferry people to their destinations and packages to consumers are another matter. Tech platforms employ around 22 million such workers. Many more drive city cabs. The platform workers are generally young, rural migrants in cities and people who have lost other work. Youth unemployment is already high, and officials do not want to make it worse. Another crucial difference is that taxi and delivery drivers have been better at organizing strikes and protests. They did just that in Wuhan in 2024, as Baidu's project was gaining momentum. In response, city officials told Baidu to stop publicizing its robo-taxi figures. Authorities, though, supportive of the technology, fear social disruption far more than tech glitches. To allay these fears, the biggest automation companies are providing help to the disaffected. Meituan has started training delivery drivers to help operate drone deliveries in Shanghai. Jobs range from loading food onto drones to monitoring flights from a command center. So far, 200 people are on this team, compared with millions of drivers. But this will expand, says Mao Yinian of Meituan. Whereas the company previously only trained its own employees for such work, he says, it now trains other workers too. These include staff at hospitals where drones deliver some test samples. The point of automation is ultimately to replace workers who need to be paid a regular wage with robots, which do not. This will eventually end up being true in China, too. In the meantime, the world, anxious about AI jobs apocalypse, will be watching the Chinese experiment in human-first automation closely. Finance and economics section continues on page 70. Productivity growth, the Lazarus effect. Washington, D.C. Lo, productivity in America is rising, saith the data. As with many a miracle, onlookers disbelieve their eyes at first. For a decade after the global financial crisis of 2007 through 2009, rich world productivity growth was, by historical standards, deadish. Since prosperity depends on the ability to produce more with the same labor, this consigned even America to eternal stagnation. and don't ask about Europe. The Congressional Budget Office, a fiscal watchdog, which consistently overestimated productivity growth in the 2010s, has been consistently glum this decade. See Chart 1. Partial data hinting otherwise was dismissed as false prophets. But those data kept coming, and now they are indisputable. Over the past 5 years or so, American productivity has been growing at the fastest rate in around two decades. Whether you look at output per worker per hour, it has risen by a lively 2% a year, from a moribund 1% for most of the 2010s. This has led the Federal Reserve to raise its median forecast for America's long-run GDP growth from 1.8% to 2%. Jerome Powell, the outgoing chair, bore witness at a recent press conference. "I never thought I'd see this many years of really high productivity," he marveled in response to a question from The Economist. "It is too early to credit artificial intelligence with the resurrection. Productivity picked up in the early 2020s, whereas large language models have come into real commercial use only in the past year or so. If previous technological revolutions are anything to go by, the AI age will take at least a few years to show up in productivity statistics. Its main macroeconomic discernible impact so far has been on business investment, particularly in data centers. To divine the real causes of the phenomenon, The Economist started by poring over official data on productivity growth by sector since 2000 from America's Bureau of Labor Statistics. Between 2019 and 2024, the information industry, which covers areas from software and telecoms to publishing and filmmaking, came top with an annual rate of 6%, around 6%. That was no higher than the annual average in 2000 to 2019, nor is America's recent uptick the consequence of this particularly efficient industry accounting for a bigger slice of the economy. In the past 6 years, the sector's share of total American output has hovered between 5.3% and 5.5%. Instead, some of the biggest jumps in productivity growth have come in professional services and management. These make up a tenth of the American economy, up a little from 2019. They are the sort of businesses that do not produce new technology, but are keen users of it. In the past few years, America's suits have at last taken full advantage of the signature innovations of the 2010s, smartphones, cloud computing, video conferencing, and the like. Productivity growth also sped up in oil and gas. The shale fracking revolution of the 2010s turned America from a net energy importer to an exporter. In 2023, it sold half as much energy abroad, net of imports, as Saudi Arabia. Since then, construction of new liquefaction plants for natural gas has allowed America to send fuel to Europe and Asia, where it fetches higher prices than at home. The indirect effects of America's energy boom may be yet more consequential. Electricity is an input into just about everything, and Americans pay half as much for it, on average, as Europeans, and a third less than the Japanese. When it is inexpensive and abundant, workers and machineries can keep producing as much as possible without worrying too much about energy use. That helps explain why energy-intensive businesses like mining and chemicals have not collapsed as they have in Europe. Another factor behind the spurt in productivity growth is both fuzzier and more fundamental. The American economy remains unusually flexible, dynamic, and innovative by rich world standards. This makes it particularly adaptable, especially in times of crisis. Indeed, the start of the latest productivity boom coincided with the nigh-biblical pestilence of the COVID-19 pandemic, and in contrast to the previous big upswing over two decades ago, other rich countries have not experienced the same miraculous revival this time. The Book of Jobs, unlike much of Europe, for instance, America largely opted to hand out pandemic assistance in cash rather than pursuing complex schemes that tied workers to their existing jobs. When lockdown layoffs began to be unwound, people were likelier to find new work in more efficient businesses because these were the firm's best place to start hiring. The American economy is also taking more recent shocks in its stride. From the start of 2025 to March 2026, productivity growth was fairly solid, between 1.2% American worker, including farmers, and 2.1% per hour for non-farm workers, at an annual rate, see chart 2. This was despite Donald Trump's best efforts to the contrary in the form of anti-growth tariffs, mass deportation, and attacks on institutions like the Fed. It is likely to survive the president's strategically misguided war in Iran and the AI age, which will probably show up in these productivity statistics sooner rather than later, even if the models never attain godlike powers. Expect the productivity miracle to continue.